as Archbishop, it's my responsibility to make clear the Church's teaching whenever it may be called into question. And the situation here involves what is called scandal.
It's Archbishop Raymond Burke of St. Louis Archdiocese, or for the time being of St. Louis Archdiocese. He's going to be moving on. We're going to be finding out where the good Archbishop is headed. He was responding there to what he called scandal, his need to resign from a local board due to the life issue, or what he considered as a conflict over the issue of abortion. He has been known nationwide, perhaps worldwide, as one of the stalwarts in the American Catholic Church, and that has brought him in for some criticism and for some praise. We'll find out where the good bishop is going as we talk in this hour with Colleen Carroll Campbell. Colleen is a regular guest. She also joins us to talk a bit about her father, who recently passed away, and about the significance of fathers. And a little later, we'll talk with her about the movie that was something of a pop culture phenomenon even before it became a movie, Sex and the City. Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm Todd Wilkin. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Colleen, first of all, condolences on the passing of your father.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about him. He sounds like a marvelous man.
Yes, well, as you know, I wrote my St. Louis Post-Dispatch column today on my dad and his journey through dementia. He had Alzheimer's for 12 years. He was a very brilliant man and a great advocate for those who were marginalized, specifically the mentally handicapped and developmentally disabled children. He spent much of his life doing that, also working for the church in various capacities, supporting family life and ministering to the sick and dying. So he had a very full life, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 1996, and had a long journey through that where he really taught me some of the best lessons of my life that I got from him in the way that he handled that with grace and with faith and joy.
Many people see dementia, and we see it more and more often, of course, as the population ages, as leaving people a shell of their former selves.
Right.
Was that your experience with your dad?
No, absolutely not. And as I mentioned today and in some other writings I've done on this subject, those kind of descriptions, while I understand what's behind them, they always tended to bother me. And I think I felt that even more after Dad died just 2 weeks ago, because at no time did I see him as a shell or a shadow. There's no question that Alzheimer's is a terrible disease. It robs people of their memories, of their intellect, of their analytical ability, of their language skills. It's a debilitating and terrible disease. But, you know, as long as the human body is there, we know the human soul is there. And until the soul is separated from the body at death, there is still a human person there. And I saw that very clearly with my father, right up literally to the moment he died on his deathbed in what doctors told us was a comatose state. He could still, and only for my mother, only at my mother's voice, pucker his lips to give her kisses when she would ask for one. He wouldn't do it for me or my brother. I think that's because she cared for him so intimately for so many years, and he loved her so much. Even opened his eyes at one point and scooted himself across the bed with his arms open so he could hug her one last time. Was very loving to my brother and me, to my husband and my sister-in-law, and was just a man who was very much himself right to the end, even as he was obviously diminished and incapacitated by this disease.
Colleen, fathers in pop American culture have become, in many cases, just the sources of comedy. One might even say comedic whipping boys.
Right.
And fatherhood has, I don't know, in some ways, I think, been diminished thereby. Talk about the importance of fatherhood, or regaining the importance of fatherhood.
Well, it is certainly something we need to recapture and think about, especially in an age of sperm donors. We're talking now a lot about same-sex adoption, which is already a reality in many places, and single motherhood by choice, sort of the fashionable idea that a woman should actively seek out motherhood with no intention of having a father on the scene for the child. It's become sort of this idea that fathers are kind of second-class mothers. Nice if you can have one, doesn't really matter if you can't. Maybe they're good for providing a paycheck, but not much else. Or they're sort of affectionate, but not necessarily crucial to child development. A couple of weeks ago, I tackled that question in one of my Post-Dispatch articles and did a little research. 2007 Father Facts Report is a great report on this by the National Fatherhood Initiative. I also interviewed University of Virginia sociologist Brad Wilcox, who has done numerous studies on the importance of fathers. And it's interesting how the sociological data is increasingly affirming our common sense intuitions about dads, that they make a distinctive contribution to a child's development that really can't be made by a woman. It's different. And it's just natural. It's not something they sit around trying to do necessarily. Obviously, to be a good father, you have to be intentional about it. But things like roughhousing with the kids, things that fathers just tend to do, research has shown that it activates different parts of a child's brain. It teaches a child to be more assertive in the world. And that if you only have, for instance, the nurturing side that women tend to naturally favor, the child misses some things, both in social skills, intellectually. And study after study has shown that children fare best when they're raised by their married mothers and fathers. So I think we need to be thinking more about the importance of fathers.
Your thoughts on the departure of St. Louis Archbishop Raymond Burke?
Well, I was very saddened to hear the news. I can't say I was surprised. He's really the most brilliant legal mind in the Catholic Church today, so I don't think we really expected to keep him here forever. I was hoping we'd keep him a little longer. It's a great promotion for him, a great honor, but a huge loss, I think, for St. Louis. Not only St. Louis Catholics, but people across St. Louis who could recognize that his principled stance, particularly on behalf of the vulnerable and the unborn, really made a distinctive contribution here and also forced us to talk about some issues that I think for a long time we just haven't bothered with.
How do you think the media treated Archbishop Burke?
Not well. Not terribly well at all. I think he was made out to be a caricature when he first arrived. I think through time I could recognize some journalists sort of warming up to him, realizing that, wow, this guy really is, you know, nonpartisan. He really means it when he says the church can't affirm abortion or the destruction of embryonic life or anything else that directly contradicts the dignity of the human person. So I think there was some grudging respect there. But on the whole, including on some of the TV reports I saw the day his promotion was announced, there was just a lot of muddled coverage and a lot of kind of rehashing controversies without clearly stating why Burke was saying some of these things. There was often this depiction of him as if he were coming up with some interesting opinions and kind of foisting them upon the world, but he was merely articulating and defending the constant teaching of the Catholic Church, and that's his job. And I think he did it courageously, and I think it's our loss if we miss that.
Now, I can't say I was ever a fan of the show on HBO, Sex and the City, but when the movie came out, Colleen, it was as though, you know, when the Pope visited the United States,
yes.
I think it got less coverage than when they walked the red carpet for Sex and the City.
That's right. It was quite a phenomenon, whether you liked the show or not. I wasn't a particular fan, but I did see it. And I did see the movie mostly because I didn't feel right writing a column about the whole thing if I didn't watch the movie. But, yeah, it was a phenomenon, but I think had a lot of messages that I think have not been helpful. There was a poll recently that showed that a lot of singles actually felt influenced by this, particularly women, feeling that the show made it more acceptable for them to be unfaithful in romantic relationships, not to worry about ever really finding committed love and marriage, to date more like men date, whatever that exactly means. But I think we know from the show that it means being pretty cavalier about sex and commitment.
What concerns me about something like Sex and the City is not so much that it's on the air. I don't think that really surprises anybody, or that it is a pop culture phenomenon, but that it does portray for women probably the most unrealistic picture of what that kind of lifestyle really is and really does lead to.
Absolutely. And that was something that I talked about a bit in the column that I wrote on this a couple weeks ago in the Post-Dispatch. I was just marveling that three of the four lead characters wind up happily married at the end of the show. I won't give away which ones, but longtime viewers can probably guess the one who doesn't. But, I mean, these are women who, you know, if any average normal woman, you know, attractive or not, living in New York City or not, lived life the way these women did for as many years as they did on our television sets, believe me, I think they would be dealing more with sexually transmitted diseases and attachment disorders than they would with these Prince Charmings who just sort of swoop in. It's amazing that it portrayed in many ways these women who just jump from bed to bed, treat men like things, you know, cure their loneliness by buying $800 pairs of shoes, and then suddenly, at the drop of a hat, when they're ready to settle down, Mr. Right is there, their heart is open and ready and unsullied by a million previous encounters and ready to completely and fully and perfectly commit for the rest of life. And it's a beautiful dream, but it's not the reality. And the scary thing is, I think a lot of young women have patterned some of their dating habits on these women, but I think they're going to find that the end result is probably not going to be as shining and easy as the Hollywood ending.
With only about 20 seconds, is it, in a sense, one last gasp of the sexual revolution? We really can have it all, even if it's only on the silver screen.
I think that's certainly what it was intended to be. But interestingly enough, even on the show, sometimes you would see glimpses where this wasn't working out, where the shopping sprees and the cocktail nights were not quite soothing that emptiness that these women felt. So in some ways, it was revealing of the other side of the sexual revolution.
Colleen Carroll Campbell, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
You can read Colleen's columns at the web at colleen-campbell.com. We'll be right back, and we'll talk with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about Islam.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Pastor Charles Lehman, Pastor Tom Christ, David Spears, Dean Larson, Mike Bennett, Pastor Andrew Etzler, Pastor Thomas Winter, Sean Miller, Philip Cawthon, and Thomas Anderson. Thanks so much for your support.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues Etc.
618-223-8384. It's the new phone number for the Issues Etc. listener comment line. 618-223-8384. Leery about calling a live radio talk show? Want to remain anonymous? Leave your recorded question or comment on the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're big boys. We can take it. 618-223-8384.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Susan Gelbach, Jonathan Townsend, Christina Schellenbach, Berkeley Baker, Darlene Cawthon, Brian J. Dumont, Clint Poppy, Daniel Sanchez, Michael D. Rose, and Denise Stout. Thanks for your support.